legit.
Welcome to Strata Stories. My name is Thomas Schreiber, and I'm the Director of Marketing here at Strata. Strata is a single EMR platform and revenue cycle management service for physical, occupational, and speech therapy practices that helps you achieve a 99.99% reimbursement rate. On today's episode, Paul Singh, CEO of Strata, talks with Rafi Salazar, PT and the CEO of Proactive Rehab and Wellness. Paul and Rafi talk through why Rafi pays his therapist to create content each week, what it means to be in the expertise business, how to craft a positioning statement for your clinic, and the importance of leveraging digital media in your practice. If you'd like to learn more about Strata and see how our EMR and RCM works, head over to stratapt.com to book a demo. Now, without further delay, here's today's episode.
When Thomas filled me in on your background, you know, he mentioned that you're in the clinic one day a week. I know this is a broad question and it's not a simple answer, but just I'm curious, how'd you get there? Well, you know, one day a week seems like the dream.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny. So I actually did not take the traditional route into clinic ownership. I was doing consulting with large healthcare organizations. I was actually sitting on a contract. We were doing probably, I want to say it was a $5 million a year contract with the state of Georgia. We were consulting doing like big system-wide case management, provider readiness and recruitment for the Department of Behavioral Health. So while that was happening, I came into that little boutique firm. It was a boutique consulting firm. And I knew that I had like, it was a 6-month runway, but the pay was 3 times what I was making at the VA as a clinic lead. So I left and took that 6-month gig, which actually turned out to be around 4 years, give or take. It was awesome. But I knew that I needed something on the side. So I started one of the big projects that I did when I was at the VA was a patient engagement big project for specifically the outpatient clinics in the VA. So this was about the time when I was there that the VA was like way in the negative light. There was the scheduling issues and people were getting put on wait lists and there was just a lack of trust for the department and its ability to provide care. But then also like we were losing team members left and right. So we did this provider and patient engagement strategy. And I thought, you know what, like this project has a lot of applicability to the outpatient PT world, to the private market. So while I left to go do consulting on this big state project, I built RehabU on the side, which was really just consulting with outpatient PT clinics, mainly on like the big things that like Jerry Durham talks about, right? Like patients dropping out, no-shows, cancellations, all of that. In fact, I like put together something called like the cancellation reduction framework, which I think is still available for download on the website. Anyways, the contract with COVID, the contract with the state went away. So like my main source of income was drying up for the business. And I was like, man, I'm going to need something else. And at the time I was sitting on a pile of cash. This clinic is literally like, I could probably sprint and be at my house in like 5 minutes. It's very, very close. It was coming up for sale. The owners were ready to retire. COVID kind of pushed them over the edge. And it was COVID also like made the valuation very attractive. So I told my wife, I was like, you know, short of me working from home, like this is the closest our office will ever be. So we actually bought it. And my idea for buying the clinic was like, it's going to be a case study for the consulting work that I'm doing. So we bought it really with the intention of like flipping it eventually. So the idea was never to buy it and work it full time. It was very much like we're going to do these systematic things that we were doing with all these other clinics. And we were just going to kind of document it along the way. And as that, you know, as the transformation happened, then we would use that to launch consulting projects and consulting work. Well, now my consulting work is like totally shifted. I'm doing like healthcare innovation, tech integration, go-to-market strategy for a lot of healthcare technology companies. But I like the idea of a platform business. One of my business partners at the firm, at the consulting firm when I was there, told me like, well, listen, I like the idea of having this business that you build that kind of provides you the freedom to do all these fun little projects. And that's kind of what the clinic has been for me for the last 3 years. It's been this platform that there's always patients coming in, there's always people getting treated, which is awesome. And that provides a steady stream of revenue. And then that gives me the freedom to do stuff like this, to do the podcast, to do consulting with interesting companies doing interesting things.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool. It's interesting as I hear you talk about it too. You sort of, you know, obviously I don't mean any disrespect. We don't know each other that well yet, but you know, it's interesting. You take these ideas for granted, the way you kind of like, you know, if I had to summarize what you talked about, it's like, you know, I was doing the stuff and I sort of tripped and stumbled my way forward. You're being really humble. But I think buried in all that humility, I think is, it sounds like this sort of clear idea of what the objective was. You know, you kind of, maybe you wouldn't say it this way in your own words, but like, I get the impression that when you found this particular clinic to purchase, for example, it checked a lot of the boxes you had in your head and it was running already and stuff like that. So kind of going one step forward, you know, you alluded to this in your talk there just a second ago, but you talked about like, you sort of alluded to the idea of positioning and niching and sort of the technology. You called it a platform, I think is the exact word you used, I think. Can you talk about that? And I'm just leaving this openly broad. I'm just kind of, your ideas are really fascinating.
Oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, so I wanted a platform business and not so much platform like we think about Michael Hyatt that has like the book platform, like not like that, like actually like a physical, like I wanted something to be able to stand the rest of my career work on. But that involved like having to get the business up and running. I think when I bought it, it was two PTs. So they didn't have OT. I'm an OT by trade. Didn't have any OT involved. It was just two PTs. They were doing like 125 visits a month. This was the tail end of COVID, so that probably impacted it a good bit too, but it was razor thin margins. And I was like, well, we need to turn this thing around. Like we can't, 125 visits a month is not going to be able to provide for me and these two PTs and all of that. So the big way that we decided to do that was really by positioning ourselves with, because of some of the work that I've done here in the city, the local city, I had some good relationships with physicians that I was kind of bringing into this relationship. I also had another discipline. We were going to add PT and OT. So now we became like proactive, stopped being proactive physical therapy and became like proactive rehabilitation. So we had this like multidisciplinary thing. So we did kind of drive a lot of business from the fact that we were going to these referral sources and to these patients and saying, listen, instead of going here, here, here for all of your therapy needs, we've got like a one-stop shop. So that became like one of the core components of the positioning for the clinic. But then also we're privately held and we're not a big chain. So I know that there's a lot of like, this is a divisive topic and I don't necessarily have like a dog in the fight one way or the other. I think they're the big, large chains that do like conveyor belt PT have some kind of demand in the market or else they'd be all out of business, right? So it's not the way I want to run a PT clinic. It's not the way that I want that the patients that come to see us want to be treated. Like, I don't want that to sound like a judgmental thing. There are some PT clients that are like, listen, I just want to come in. I want to do my exercise. I want to make sure you're making sure that I'm doing them right. And then I want to get out of here. You know, like they don't care. They see PT very much as a commodity. We decided to take much more of a, like, I'm a big fan of the biopsychosocial approach and individualizing care. A lot of the work that I did consulting and then at the university and research was around this idea of like individualizing and humanizing the healthcare experience. So we leaned very heavily into that for the like the positioning and marketing for the clinic was that this is not going to be a conveyor belt therapy. You know, I had happened to just have written a book or was in the process of writing a book called Better Outcomes, A Guide to Humanizing Healthcare. So we leveraged all of that to kind of position proactive in the local market as this is the place where you go when you've tried that conveyor belt and it didn't work out, or you want a more hands-on approach. You want to be, you know, you want to know your therapist. You want that personalized touch and relationship. And that has driven us a whole lot of business as well. We've got patients that come back to us over and over again. They refer their family and friends. And that's not to say that you can't build a successful business on that high volume approach. It's just for us, given my values, the values of the team, kind of what the content that I had already created in the past and that we were leveraging for this business, it just made much more sense to go with, okay, we're going to go all in on this individualized patient care model. And that's kind of carried us a good ways as well.
So I'm probably jumping around here a little bit, but like when I looked at your podcast and kind of picked a couple episodes to listen to, it's, you talk about these ideas openly. And like, again, I think you take them really, it's like to you, they're normal, right? But like for most practices, the concept of marketing sort of feels like a dirty word.
Yeah.
Niching seems limiting, you know, like it's like 77 excuses for why people can't do it. And obviously don't tell me anything you don't feel comfortable sharing. But when you talk about, for example, one of the episodes that you recently put out in your show that the title immediately caught my eye is you said something, or the title was something like leveraging digital media in your practice. And I know I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, but what does that look like for you? Like when you think about your practice, and I'm not trying to pick on you. I think a lot of times when I talk to practice owners about these ideas of marketing, it just to them sometimes seems so abstract. It seems so hand wavy. And so what I'm kind of curious is, to the extent you're willing to share, what does leveraging digital media, what does marketing look like at a practice like yours? You know, is it a TikTok account for one of your, you know, an interns? Is it a, you know, is it you? You know, like genuinely broad question. I'm curious what that looks like for you.
Yeah. So there's a lot you can unpack in that question. I think the biggest thing is kind of making the decision about like whether this is going to be like this broad brand-based discussion or marketing plan around like this is proactive versus like the individual clinicians and, you know, how that all works. But the basic understanding and the premise that we've taken is that physical therapists, clinicians, occupational therapists, we have highly specialized skill and knowledge. And that is truly our most valuable contribution to any kind of patient engagement or encounter, is the fact that we have this vast array. You know, I always tell people when I was teaching them at the university or when I talk to my team here, like we've got a bunch of technical knowledge running around in our brains, and that does not make us super valuable because Google is there, right? Like anybody can Google anything, the four best shoulder exercises, whatever. What makes clinicians valuable is the fact that we're able to take this wide expanse of technical knowledge and apply it to specific situations, a lot of times specific patients in unique situations. So understanding that, like really what we are in the business of as clinicians is knowledge translation. We're in the business of passing on and developing expertise in our patients, right? So it's very much an expertise business. And I think if you take that philosophy, the medium through which you do it really doesn't matter. You know, like TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, that's all what's or how's, right? The real fundamental thing is understanding that what you do as a clinician, the most valuable thing that you do is disseminate information. You are being paid for your expertise, right? And if you do that, the natural order of things is that, okay, expertise is why I'm getting paid, which means I need to demonstrate expertise in a way that develops that know, like, and trust so patients and referral sources reach out to me, right? So that's kind of like the philosophical understanding. And then it's like, okay, well, how do I do that? Okay, well, we create content. And the best information on this that I've ever read or heard was by a guy named David C. Baker. He's a consultant that works with marketing firms. And I want to say, like, until recently, he was a one-person firm generating like $1.7 million a year. And he built his entire business off of content. Just Google him. He's amazing. But he wrote a book a couple years ago called The Business of Expertise. And one of the points in his book was, you're an expert, so here's how experts market, or they should market. You need to think about passing and spreading your ideas, your point of view, almost like a crop duster. Like you're just spreading it out across the field. And that should all be free. Your insights, your knowledge, your point of view, the way that comes to bear on the way, in this case, physical therapy is practiced or delivered or the service is provided, all of that should be free and readily available. And then when you go to land that plane and discuss it with a specific farmer about his crop, that's when the money comes in, right? That's when you charge a lot of money, or that's when the actual exchange happens. So I liked that dichotomy of like, okay, as an expert, I'm just going to spread what, like, my point of view. Because the reality is, like, especially when I was consulting with healthcare practices, what I was saying was not unique. The idea that a patient needs to be engaged so that they show up to their appointments is not rocket science. You know, I'm not like Copernicus discovering the sun over here. The way that it was presented, or my point of view in how that should be implemented in a practice, is what made that consulting service unique, right? And that's what people reached out to me about. It wasn't because they knew they needed to lower their cancellation rates. Everybody knew that. But they liked the way that I talked about it and the way I presented it and the way I went about going about it. And it's the same thing with physical therapy. Like there is, just on my street right here where the clinic is, we've got three PT clinics, like within a two-block radius, right? The people that come to us don't come to us because we're the only PTs, or because we know how to do PTs, or because our, you know, our services are nice and our facility is clean and all that. Competence is the baseline, right? You can deliver PT, you are good. That's what patients expect. What they stick around for, or what makes them reach out to you in the first place, is the fact that maybe they've checked you out on Google, maybe they've looked at your website, maybe they've seen some of that content. and they liked the way that you discussed a specific issue, or they liked the fact that it seems like you're very specialized in my problem area, or your point of view around it is what I'm attracted to. So as clinicians, when we think about like, what does marketing look like for us? It's like, okay, find that specific area of expertise, develop a very strong and unique point of view about that, and then disseminate that point of view out in the ethernet, right? In their local communities, on the website, via all those things, TikTok, Instagram, all the social stuff. That stuff, like I said, is all secondary. What is important is that you get that point of view out so that it begins attracting to you the patients that are going to do the best for you. The ones that believe what you believe are already going to be 10 times better patients than the ones that get sent there because, you know, you're right down the street from them.
Right. Again, fascinating to hear you talk about it, because you talk about it with this confidence that it's almost like you take it for granted in a way, because you know the value of it. And yet, you know, if you and I were sitting there talking about these ideas with the, like, 87 random practice owners, we'd probably get 1,000 reasons why they couldn't do it. I think that what you just described there, though, the way I like to talk about it, or the way I like to explain it to people is that, so when I say, oh, you got to make content, I think, again, people have this like fear because they're like, oh, marketing's dirty, creating content, I'm not trying to be Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, whatever. The truth is that, like, when your friend back in college asks you a question about something, there's probably a way you explain it to him or her. And if we could just record it or write it that way, it's not what you say that's different. It's how you deliver that message that usually is different. Anyway, this is like one of the ongoing themes that we've talked about, at least in our own content over the last couple months, is that I think the state of, let's just use this broad term, like practice content or the broad PT content.
Like, it's all crap.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the state of it right now, it's like, it looks like what a lot of other technical industries look like 20 years ago. I mean, do you guys, I don't know if you remember, I'm maybe dating myself, but I remember like the first time I ever got like a word processor or whatever, like, you know, the early versions of like Lotus Notes or Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
And the manual was written by a technical writer. Like, that used to be a real job that millions of people had, where they would like write a manual, and it was just boring and dry. And I think it's part of the reason why there was this meme, you know, that nobody ever reads the manual. You just sort of like throw it out because it was boring.
Yeah.
And then like, we've come a long way now where there's TikTok accounts now that tell you how to do, you know, pivot tables, and there's blogs, and, you know, but all of them say the same thing. It's just, they deliver the message in a slightly different way. You know, my mom's not going to go read that or watch that thing on TikTok on pivot tables, but a 22-year-old fresh out of college might be. Anyway, the point is, though, is that I'm just sort of reiterating that I think you take your ideas, they're obvious to you, and I hope that like we can kind of shine a light on them and get more people to think about them this way. So like, with your practice, for example, you're based in Augusta, Georgia.
Home of the Masters, if you're into golf.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a beautiful place to be. Again, I'm going to ask this as a broad question, but I'm curious like how you talk about this with other practice owners and stuff. So, all right, so now we're talking about content and how you just described it and all that. You've got this practice in Augusta now, and let's just pretend you were just starting out. I mean, how do you niche down? How do you think about that? Is it, oh, I'm going to target amateur golfers since I'm in Augusta, or is it, I'm going to target, you know, retirees and get that Medicare? I mean, how do you think about it? Like, what is that? Like, how do you advise new practice owners to think about niching and, you know, and all that? Because it seems to me you have to kind of niche first before you start to think about marketing, unless you think it goes the other way.
For sure. No, I think that what I like to use, like, niche is pretty specific, but I think it's interchangeable with the word positioning. So, like, positioning in my mind is the idea of saying no, like saying what you don't do. It's an exercise in basically cutting out options. And the reason you do that is not so that you never treat anybody that's outside of what that niche is or what your specialty is. Specialty is probably more palatable to clinicians. And what you want to do when you come up with your positioning or your niche is you want to find that sweet spot between, you don't want to be in a category of one, because that means you're not going to make enough money, but you don't want to be so broad that you're vanilla, that you're commoditized. So there's a couple different ways you can do this. Again, depending on how you want to structure this thing for the business versus for the clinicians, I'm a big believer in the fact that because healthcare is unique in the fact that it's a, well, not it's unique in the fact that it's a service-based business, but there's a relationship there. Like, we've got patients that will come and see Raffi because it's Raffi, or Courtney because it's Courtney. I feel very strongly that the, when you think about layering it, like the business itself or the clinic itself has this positioning statement, if you would. And for ours, like a proactive, it's like, I want to say something like, we're a leader in taking an individualized approach to care or something like that. I can probably pull it up and like get real specific if we wanted to. But then under that is each individual clinician. Now, the way we do it at our practice is going to be different than other practices, but like I pay my clinicians for an allotted time every week to create content. And it's in their area of specialization, right? So one of my PTs is a pelvic floor therapist. She's cranking out articles about pelvic floor and pelvic health and, you know, postpartum, prepartum, all of that kind of stuff. Another one of my clinicians is really into running. She's training for half marathons and all that. So a lot of her content is around running injuries and all of that. So if you looked at like just the content topics, I'm an upper extremity guy, chronic pain guy. Like if you looked at just the topics, you're like, holy cow, this guy's all over the place. He's doing an article one week on pelvic health, an article the next week, or a video on like CrossFit. Like what the heck's going on with this guy? But they all fall under, and the parameters I've given them all for creating content falls under this main positioning or this main niche of the clinic as being like individualized, human-based, all of that, right? If you're in a different mindset, you know, a lot of people don't like to do that because if, you know, if Courtney leaves, she's taking patients with them, right? Like there is a real risk in that. So a lot of clinic owners are not going to invest in their clinicians at that level. They want everything kind of being created for the clinic, and that's fine. The content needs to be, again, specific for the positioning or the niche for that clinic. So maybe that clinic does niche down and say, okay, I'm in Augusta. I would think amateur golf is going to be one of those things that just market size is going to be too small in Augusta, but like golfers, maybe there's a lot of high school golfers, college golfers, like you could probably get into something like that. In fact, there's a PT in Aiken across the river who that's her whole business is golf performance. And she seems to be doing pretty well. So you really have to think about, okay, the positioning says, or my positioning is, we do X for Y. That is a positioning statement. We provide, and it's not like I provide physical therapists for adults. You know, like that's crap. It's like we provide individualized, tailored performance programs for amateur athletes in Augusta, Georgia, or something. Like that would be an example of a solid positioning statement. You're clearly defining what the service is, the we do what for who, and then who that audience is. And then everything kind of falls under that. The content you're creating, the topics you're going to choose, because that gives you, again, you know, without getting like too nerdy in the marketing speech, that's your avatar and you're writing for your avatar, your audience. But it all starts with this positioning of we do X for Y. The big issue people get with that is like, well, what if I want to see a retired person on Medicare that's having a total joint replacement? My website says everything about golf rehabilitation. Like they're not going to reach out to me. And the reality is, if people want to work with you, if what you're saying resonates with you, maybe it's your point of view, that's why you have to spread that thing out, they will do the mental gymnastics in their own mind to work with you, right? The reason I started working with healthcare technology companies was because I was doing patient engagement work with clinics, and the ones that started reaching out to me wanted to help clinicians with patient engagement. So they did the mental gymnastics to hire me to work for them. It's the same basic principle. The people that are tangential to your positioning will find you because of your content, because of your point of view, but you still need to dial in that positioning so that you know who to target with your advertising, with your content, with your marketing.
Rafi, I love this because I feel like every 5 minutes you drop a bomb on here in a good way of like, you know, an idea that you think is sort of normal. And I've never heard anybody do this. You just said there that each of your staff has a essentially paid time to create content. You said it like so normally, so naturally, right? And like that's the kind of thing that media companies say. So to the extent you're willing to share, like what does that look like? So the two examples you gave there, as I recall, one was one of your employees is running a marathon or training and she's creating content related to that. So can you just shed some light on what does that look like? Are you saying, hey, I need 5 pieces of content out on your personal Insta account, you know, every week? What is the guidance you're giving them? And how do you measure that ROI on that time you spent?
Yeah. So a lot of it is, I start out by saying like for our full-time employees, it's a requirement, right? Like it is a requirement for you to create content. Because again, we're trying to build an expertise business here. We want to be seen as not just your run-of-the-mill PT clinic, but this is like you come to Proactive because Susanna is a specialist in pelvic health. You come to Proactive because Courtney's a specialist in running rehabilitation, right? So for a full-time therapist, that's just a requirement. And it's, we build it into their like utilization plan where they get so many hours a week that is just dedicated to creating content. The way we actually distribute it is twofold. So there is an incentive plan in place for digital and educational products that are developed. So like we're about to launch a half marathon training program that Courtney developed. And that's going to go on our LMS on the website. You'll be able to buy it. And, you know, Courtney's going to get a piece of all the revenue that comes from that, right? Like that's how it works. And that's all predetermined. The percentages, you just have to sit down with a nerd and a spreadsheet and a calculator and make it work for you. So there's that piece. For our, like the people that are PRN or that are part-time and that aren't here a lot, maybe they're here a couple days a week or something like that, we still allocate them some time and it's entirely optional because most of the people that are here, not full-time, the goal is for them to be full-time at some point. So we're like helping them build that roadmap, kind of like bringing them into this culture of like, we're experts and this is what experts do. And it's based off of utilization and hours worked for your direct patient care versus administrative time and all of that. So it's all managed again, because Proactive is the platform. And this is how I kind of view it. Like I want Proactive to be the platform. Now we're using platform, not as like my own personal life, but like platform, what it means.
Yep.
Proactive is the platform that these clinicians are going to use to launch their own, hopefully expertise-based businesses and careers, which means that the content they create, I mean, they can share it on their personal sites and stuff if they want to, their profiles, but it's all getting shared through Proactive's blanket accounts. And the reason for that, one is reach and my own greedy, like we're trying to boost our own domain rating and all of that kind of stuff. Like it helps to have that happening for the clinic. And it's kind of like the rising tide that lifts all ships. And the reality is most clinicians, you will get them to create a piece of knowledge translation or something like that. You might not get them to get into the posting and the sharing and all of that. So we kind of alleviate that burden from them. It's like, listen, you create this content however you want to on this topic, we'll get it out there. And that's kind of the service that I provide for my clinicians. Like what we are doing for our teammates is we're providing the platform for them to launch their personal brand from, right? And again, taking some risk, like they might decide to leave and go do it better somewhere else, but it incentivizes me then as the clinician, as the business owner, to like really do my part to make sure that these team members are engaged and they like being here and they want to stay here, right? So there's a little bit of give and take there, but that's how it works. They're kind of riding on the platform of Proactive.
I think that's a really good way to think about it. And I say that in all my previous businesses as well. My view is that like most employers think of their employees as like sort of this asset that just needs to be contained and value needs to be extracted. And I think one of the things I like to think about is, look, you can't force anybody to be outgoing if they're not already outgoing. That's okay. Like if some people want to stay inwards, that's okay. But there's always this subset of your employees that are going to TikTok anyway. They're going to Instagram anyway. They're going to blog anyway. And so it's like, if you can just kind of maybe help or make it okay for them to talk about it in a way, and you know, the point is, it's like the ROI on it, at least for me and my other business, has been amazing. And I think our team will tell you, like, I keep trying to tell people, I don't want to be the face of Strata. I'm happy to do it, but I'd like more and more of our staff to get out there. I love what you're saying there, though. Like one of the other tactical examples that I give people, at least in my other businesses, is that I say, like, look, like just you're already creating content. Like, let's say you get a speaking gig somewhere. If it's a keynote thing, I'll pay for the flight and for your spouse to go. Anyway, the point is, though, that I think it's kind of interesting that you're investing in this. I don't think I've ever heard any practice owner ever say that, though. I mean, tell me, am I overthinking this? Like, is it crazy? Am I treating this like it's some crazy thing that I've never heard anybody else do? Or are you used to practice owners creating?
No, I mean, I'm not used to practice owners doing this at all, but...
Okay, yeah.
It makes sense in other businesses, right?
Yeah. It's super fascinating. Yeah. Cause like eventually, like, yeah, the big fear people have is like, oh man, they're going to get huge on TikTok and then they're going to leave. And it's like, well, look, they were going to do that despite you anyway.
Well, and the reality is if you have that good relationship built in, and this, we're already kind of exploring this a little bit down the line with some folks, is like, they're getting big. They have ambitions. You know, your people have ambitions and we're a small practice. We're one clinic right now for now, but as they grow, as people want to step out, maybe they want to do a little bit of entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship, like if you've got the platform built for them, and you can get really creative about like, okay, maybe you do want to open up a location here, and you know, we bring you under the proactive blanket or the family or however you want to say it. I look at it really as what this is going to do for us long term, versus like this risk of them leaving. Because if you do it right, they're not going to want to leave. They're going to want to do their own thing, but they're going to realize what you've done for them and the kind of what you've built for them.
Right.
And they're going to want to be part of it still. And that's our goal long term.
Right. Yeah. I can't disagree with you at all. I mean, I think the reality is that even if they like blow up in a good way, now you at least have the chance to say, hey, do you want to be a partner here? Or do you want to, like, there's like, at least you have that chance for the conversation. And I think a lot of people just don't think of it that way. They're like, oh, you're tweeting on company time? Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to call HR. And it's just like, come on, that's not how tomorrow's consumers or tomorrow's patients actually think. Because to that point, you alluded to something else that I think is important. And I forget exactly how you said it, but you alluded to it where it's like, you know, what you do is sort of a commodity, like, you know, but I want to go to Rafi. And so like the brand of Rafi, like I want to go to him or I want to go to that person. Like that's just something that people don't think about very often at all. You know, it's like as more and more practices pop up, like how do you differentiate? Well, it's not going to be the waiting room or the quality of the waiting room and the magazines you have in there. It's like, hey, Rafi's not available until next Tuesday. Yeah, I'll wait till next Tuesday. You know, so it's kind of how that works. Okay. So man, I feel like every time I ask a question, you're going to drop another bomb on us here. All right. So niching or positioning and stuff like that. One of the other things you sort of talked about in the pre-interview here was this idea of like technology helping with hyper-specialization and hyper-focus. What does that mean? In that context, what does technology mean for you? Like, is that a certain CRM or like, what does that mean when you say technology can help with hyper-specialization and hyper-focus?
Yeah. I think that we live in a world where if you want food, you use DoorDash. You know, if you need a taxi, you get Uber. So I look at technology not so much as like the individual things like this CRM or this tool or this, but really what that underlying current, which is radically changing the consumer market, is doing for us in healthcare. And one of the things that it allows us to do in a very real way is become hyper-specialized, whether it be in your specific area of clinical focus. So full disclosure, I do work with this company called Squeg, and they're like, we have a platform that allows for grip strength and testing and assessment and patient management, the whole nine yards. It's awesome. If I was a hand therapist exclusively, like Squeg would be one of those things that I'm looking at. And that's technology allowing me to really, not just in the marketing, in the experience, but like really in the actual delivery of the service, like really focus on this positioning. I'm the upper extremity specialist, everything in the clinic, the technology we use, but it's really much more than that, in that technology is allowing us really to rethink the way services are bought, sold, paid for within healthcare. Now, I know that payers are always very slow to adopt some of this stuff, but in the private pay market or in some of these value-based contracts, technology really allows us to do our best work without a whole lot of clinic time. And it helps you pick those patients. So like a very basic example is we are in network at the clinic with a company, with an insurance company. So they don't pay per visit. They don't even pay per CPT code. They pay, you do an assessment or an evaluation, you send it off to them. Now this part always needs some work. I feel like they don't pay enough for this, but they will say, okay, total shoulder replacement, total knee replacement, whatever. This is the lump sum we're going to pay for. You can do whatever you want with this patient. See him one time, see him 100 times. We're going to authorize the visits, this care for 2 months, 3 months, whatever. So there's a time frame and a lump sum. As a clinician that's thinking about leveraging technology to hyper-specialize, it means like, it's like a gold mine for me. It's like, okay, these are the types of patients that I can treat with my eyes closed, that I know we're going to get really good benefit from our services, in a way that maybe we do some hybrid care. Maybe they come into the clinic, they're doing some telehealth, they're doing some remote patient monitoring. Maybe there's some asynchronous communication going back and forth through a platform or something like that. Maybe they're being seen in clinic for a half of the time that they would normally be seen if it was like traditional, as my dentist buddies call it, drilling and billing time. But we're able to become so much more efficient, deliver the same amount, I would argue probably higher level, higher quality care, more individualized care, and get paid at a rate, like if you look at per visit cost and stuff like that, revenue, that a rate that's much higher than we would get paid for even for normal, like the highest payer in our area, right? And then what it also does is it increases capacity, because now if you're in a position where these patients, these specific patients that you're already niched down and specialized in are coming in for half the visits, well, now you've got potentially 50% of your time now freed up to see more of them. So you can stack on top of that. So I really look at technology as a force multiplier in what we're doing. This requires some thinking outside of the box, and it requires definitely getting into some of those arrangements with payers or something like that that allows you to leverage some of that. But I definitely think looking at technology, not so much as like the specific tool or the specific product, but really what does this allow? What kind of capabilities does this provide for us? And then how does that work within our stated positioning, right? Because if I'm a shoulder replacement specialist, I'm looking at tools and how that's going to help me become much more efficient in that area, right?
Yeah, yeah. I love the way you're thinking about this, by the way. I feel like I could go on for another hour here. I want to be respectful of your time here. So when you think about, like, if we had to summarize everything we're talking about here in terms of what practice owners need to do to market themselves or position themselves as an expert, obviously they can come to you, of course, but what do you read? You've kind of dropped some hints at like some books you like and stuff like that, but what do people, like, what do you recommend? Like, somebody comes to you and says, you know, Rafi, I like the way you think about this. What newsletter should I subscribe to, or what book should I read? Like, or is that the wrong thing? Like, what should I?
No, I mean, I think it all works. I'm a big fan in reading outside of PT, right? Like, again, this is an idea from David C. Baker. I read him a lot. So go check out his book, The Business of Expertise. It's wonderful. One of the things he says is it's very hard to read the label from inside the pill bottle. And that's kind of what we do in any industry, really. Physical therapy is a great example of it. Like, how many canned PT content creation packets are out there, right? I'm not going to name any names, but there are big companies making a lot of money selling the same thing that they're just plugging in your clinic's name, right? Like, All that crap is very vanilla. It doesn't work, and it doesn't do anything to differentiate you. So I'm a big, big proponent of reading things from organizations and industries outside of healthcare and then bringing some of those insights to bear. So a lot of what I've read has been things on marketing, on business. I'm a consultant, or have been a consultant, was a professor. So things on Chip and Dan Heath, I love reading their books, and because they're all about knowledge translation and all of that. Like, I was reading that as a professor, and then I took some of those insights and applied it to our consulting work and then to our clinical work. But this idea that we need to look outside of ourselves for good things. And then because of your own skills, your own point of view that you're going to develop when you sit down and come up with your positioning statement, what you pull out of those things is going to be different than maybe I read the same book as you, but you view things a little differently. So the insights you pull from that are going to be different. And you're going to be able to incorporate that in your own marketing and your own content in a way that rings true for you and that attracts your ideal client. This whole idea is like, I don't want anybody coming to the clinic, just anybody. I mean, I want people coming to the clinic. I don't want just anybody coming in off the street saying, do you do physical therapy? I need physical therapy, you know? Because those patients are, experience has shown, like, they're just not going to be as engaged. You want people,
right?
And this is a great example. Somebody came in the clinic, maybe it was sometime last week. They've been on our email list since 2021. It took them about 3 years, 2.5 years. And I'm the worst about like email automations and sending emails out. Like, sometimes someone would create a piece of content, I'll put it on social, and then like a week later, I'm like, I forgot to send an email out about this. But anyways, they were opening emails, they were reading emails. They came in and said, you know what? I've been following your stuff for a couple years, and I think y'all are going to be the people that are going to help me get over XYZ. I can't even remember what it was. So, I mean, especially in the expertise business and this content thing, like the ROI, a lot of times is a long tail thing, you know? And I tell people that all the time. Like, you can write articles, you can create videos, and some people will find you and come to you right away. The reality is, like, 97% of your ideal patients or ideal clients aren't ready to buy now. And that's fine. But right. What you want is for them to be in your ecosystem to do it, to make that decision to come and see you. And that only happens by continually putting out content that aligns with that point of view. So I would say the big thing, you know, maybe read David C. Baker's Business of Expertise. His chapter on positioning is awesome. It's very much for marketers and graphic design agencies, but you can take it and apply it to healthcare. And then think about really sitting down and coming up with a solid positioning statement that we do X for Y, and then look at your point of view about it. Like, how do I believe physical therapy impacts we've used golfers before, like golf performance. What specific ways and areas can a physical therapist impact taking three strokes off your game or whatever it is?
Right.
You do those two things, come up with a solid positioning, and then take some time to really think about what your point of view is. Not that you have to be like super contrarian, but you just want it to be, this is Raffy's point of view. When I get Raffy, this is how he's approaching my golf game. You want that. And then take it and run with it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Strata Stories. Strata is a single EMR platform and revenue cycle management service for physical, occupational, and speech therapy practices that helps you achieve a 99.99% reimbursement rate. If you'd like to learn more about Strata and see how our EMR and RCM works, head over to stratapt.com to book a demo.